Sie hören eine Aufnahme des Kepler Salon Linz vom 15. November 2011 zum Thema Plattentektonik, Meeresgeologie und eine Computermaus aus dem Leben von Professor Sang-Mok Lee. Zu Gast ist Sang-Mok Lee, Seoul National University in Südkorea. Gastgeber ist Klaus Puttinger.
So, das Mikrofon ist offen. Wir dürfen beginnen. Erlauben Sie mir kurz, dass ich Ihnen zum Ablauf der Veranstaltung ein paar Sachen sage, bevor wir in Medias Res gehen. Und zwar in englisches Medias Res, die zuvor noch kurz auf Deutsch. Wir haben heute eine Veranstaltung hier im Kepler Salon, die ist gesponsert von der Firma Live Tool. Das ist jene Firma, die die Integra-Maus herstellt. Das ist die Maus, mit der Herr Professor Lee am Computer arbeitet. Diese Firma Live Tool war auch so nett, uns einen kleinen Imbiss zu sponsern. Am Ende der Veranstaltung sind Sie alle herzlich eingeladen auf Würstel hinten an der Bar. So, das war die Werbedurchsage. Ich darf Ihnen wie immer sagen, beim Kepler Salon gibt es ein Gästebuch. Scheuen Sie sich nicht, bitte sich darin einzutragen. Wenn Sie eine Bestellung nachher noch, das fällt heute aus, heute gibt es Würstel, aber ansonsten könnte man zum Cancel gehen, der befindet sich gegenüber. Das ist der Mann an der Bar hinten. Danke an ihn. Wenn wir diskutieren nach dem Input, werden Sie von den guten Geistern des Kepler Salons heute in rosa ein Mikrofon gereicht bekommen. Bitte warten Sie, bis Sie es haben. Wir nehmen diese Veranstaltung wie immer auf und das Audio-File können Sie sich im Internet anhören. Ja, mein Name ist Klaus Putting. Ich freue mich, heute hier Gastgeber zu sein. Ich bin Redakteur der Oberösterreichischen Nachrichten und versuche hier heute eine englische Moderation. Schauen wir mal, wie weit es mir gelingt. Mein English is a little corroded. So, I'm very proud, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Professor Sang, so, nicht, dass ich es falsch sage, Professor Sang-Mok Lee from South Korea. Please, a warm hand. He is geophysicist, and he studied geology and for marine geology. It is underwater where we go today. He is disabled, as you can see, disabled from the neck down after an accident he had in California, but this didn't stop him from continuing to teach and to research. And outside his academic work, he teaches others with disability and advocates these people about the rights of disabled persons. So, Mr. Professor Sang-Mok Lee, please give us your input.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here in the Kepler Salon. I was injured a little over 5 years ago, and I've been to the United States more than 5-6 times after the injury, but this is my first visit to Europe, and I'm very grateful for LifeTool to give me this opportunity. Today I'm going to talk about a little bit of my science. First of all, I'm going to talk about how I got injured, how my life has changed in the last 5 years, and then a little bit about my science. I'm going to talk about what we are doing and what we plan to do for a disabled person using the technology. Okay? Well, a little over 5 years ago, exactly 5 years and 4 months ago, I went to, as a professor, I took a bunch of students from Korea to California, United States, to study geology. The reason is that California is a desert. And because it is a desert, there is no plant or vegetation. So it's a good place for geologists to see rock without the interruption of plants. So we were going there with 13 students from Seoul, Korea, and then about equal number of students from California Institute of Technology. And we were driving in a caravan, and I think there were like 6-7 cars, vans, and my van was at the very, very back. And because of the dust kicked by the cars in front of us, the visibility was very poor. And I don't remember what happened that day, but the car I was driving flipped like this. And this is a picture where I'm still somewhere down in the driver's seat. And because of the roof crush, I got my injury as a result of a roof crush. And I heard that if you don't want this to happen to you, drive Volvo. And then as a result of that accident, as you can see here in my, I got a big fracture in my neck. And then I became paralyzed. I cannot move anything below my neck or shoulder. But I was very fortunate that this was in the middle of the desert, but one of the students in America knew how to do CPR, so he kept me alive for 40 minutes in this hot desert, and helicopter came by, picked me up, dropped me off at the nearest hospital roof. And that's how I got saved, and I was very lucky in that sense. I wonder if this happened, if this accident has happened in other places, I may not have lived, but, you know, it was kind of magical that even out in nowhere, there was a helicopter which could be called and come to the scene in 40 minutes. So, I became very famous in Korea as a result of accident. Before my accident, I was a small scientist doing his small research. But as a result of accident, I became very famous. And in Korea, people call me Steve Hawking of Korea. So I said, when they talk about the real Hawking, I said, oh, you mean the Steve Hawking of England? Okay. Try not to confuse with Steve Hawking of Korea. I just called the other person Steve Hawking of England. That's a joke, but anyway. After the accident, I stayed in the United States for 3 months at three different hospitals. And at one of the hospitals there, I was introduced to a computer and to this device called Integra Mouse. And this is how my relationship with Austria began in a hospital in the United States, because they introduced me this Integra Mouse. And when I first used this, I realized that I can go back to work immediately. So after 3 months, I came back to Korea, and in 6 months, I went back to work and basically did everything I did before my injury. I taught, I teached, I wrote papers and everything. And at first, I was not, I tried not to go on a public media, but in about 20 months later, I was discovered by a media reporter, and the next day I was on the headline of all the major newspapers in Korea. And people said that, you know, Sang-mo, just wait 3 weeks, then you'll be forgotten. You know, media celebrity goes up and then it takes 3 weeks. But then, until this day, even after more than 3 years, I'm still focus of media attention in Korea. And I think that is because I came back to work very quickly, and despite the injury, I'm able to do what I used to do. Now, well, many people thought that was because of my courage and my personality, but in reality, it is the tools that made the difference, you know. In United States, the medical cost is very, very expensive. I compared it to Korea, and it was about 15 times more expensive. One day of stay at intensive care unit in United States cost me $23,000. So about over 15,000 euro, okay? I guess. So after 3 months of hospital in the United States, the bill that I received was about 1.2 million. So when people ask me why I recovered and came back to work quickly, I say because too expensive. I had to get out of hospital as fast as I can, you know. And there is some truth to it, you know. In Korea, on the other hand, because we have a very good medical system, people with my level of injury can stay in a hospital forever. So the good medical system in Korea, it is ironic. It prevents people from going back to work, you know. But because of high medical costs in the United States, I was able to get back to work quickly. No, it's ironic, but and then about 3 years ago, I wrote a column in one of the newspapers in Korea, and this was about assistive technology, this tool that help people with disability. Korea is always seeking how Korean government is investing on what to make money, like on a big something they invest, and that will have a big financial return. But I talked about assistive technology, and then a few weeks after I wrote this column, just 3 weeks later, I got a call from the government. They want to invest in assistive technology. And, you know, I'm not a developer, but they needed somebody famous and to spearhead this program. And I asked them how much, and they said, how about we give you $10 million a year for next 10 years, every year. Every year, $10 million for the next 10 years. So I said, oh, I was surprised, but I said, how about a building? And I also asked for the building, so I ended up becoming a project manager of a very big program for disability in Korea. And this is very new project. Okay. But that is not what I used to do before. I am an earth scientist. I study volcanoes and earthquakes under the sea. You probably heard about plate tectonics, that when you have earthquakes in other countries, you hear often in the news that it's because Earth is composed of plates, and most of this activity happens under the water. So my specialty is to go to sea and study earthquakes and volcanoes under the sea. And as you can see here in this picture, this is a plot of earthquakes that happened over the years. And if you plot where the earthquake had happened, you know, you cannot see Japan and Taiwan because they are covered by these dots. Korea has no earthquake or volcano, and so in a way, it's a joke, you know. People think, we don't have earthquake in Korea, why do you study earthquake, you know? So I'm doing this for my own curiosity. So I'm doing science that is not at all useful to Korea. But right now, and on one hand, but on the other hand, I'm doing lucky to do this disability program, which help many people in Korea directly and immediately. Well, the Earth plate moved because of convection, and Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. But if you look at the seafloor on the Earth, you get a chance to see the very recent activity of Earth, the last 200 million years of Earth's history is on the surface of the Earth, and you can observe this by going to the sea. So this is about 5% of the Earth's history. So if I go to the sea, I know what has happened in the recent 5% of the Earth's history. But based on this information, we infer what Earth might have done in the remaining 95% of the Earth's history, the older part. And this helps us not only to study Earth, but to reconstruct what has happened to the other terrestrial bodies in the our solar system. Like we have Earth here, Venus, Mars, and then the moons of Jupiter. And by studying very recent Earth, which is covered under the water, we get a very good data on what has happened. And this allows us to infer the rest of the history and also the history of other planets. And nowadays, we can also use satellites to understand the seafloor under the water. Because by this law of gravitational attraction, when you have a seamount under the water elevation, the seafloor is a little bit higher at that seamount by about 10-20 centimeters, which satellites can resolve. And so by studying from the satellite, you can also, based on gravity, you can see, you can infer what the seafloor is like, under the water. And this is, if you forget about that, and then if you forget that, and this is what can happen. This is a sort of a joke that, you know, Los Angeles class submarine was coming out of Guam, and it missed one of the seamounts there and crushed into the seamount. This is why marine geology is important. Yeah. It says about few minutes ago, they measured the water depth and they thought it was 2,000 meter. A few minutes later, they ran into a seamount. Okay. Also, these areas which we call mid-ocean ridges, these are underwater volcanoes. They also are very important because the water goes in the volcanoes and come out, and they change the chemistry of seawater. And rock-water interaction with the hot water and rock interaction, that has fundamentally changed the composition of the earth and also the composition of the surface rock. And you might seen on television these black smokers where a lot of biology and exotic ecosystem underwater live without sunlight, where there's no sunlight. So this is what it looks like in a close view. This was taken by a scientist in University of Washington, and he made a composite picture of what underwater volcano looked like. This is very important because previously people thought that you need sunlight for cells, microorganisms to produce organic material, and then for other biology, other ecosystem to build, to thrive based on this organic material created by sunlight. But in the deep ocean, there is no sunlight. But they still have a very thriving community. And that is, people have found out that this is because of the sulfur and various chemical that comes out from the underwater volcano. So there is a bacteria, and they produce organic material not from photosynthesis but using chemical, which they call it chemosynthesis. And they are the ones who produce the fundamental organic material, and that allows the biology in the deep water to thrive on it. And this was a big discovery, but another thing biologists have discovered is that if you look at the very primitive forms of life on Earth, they found out that the microbiology, the bacteria, the very primitive ones, they like to live in hot water, hot temperature. Normally, bacteria we see on land would die if the temperature is above 37 degrees C or so. But they found that in the deep water, the primitive bacteria, they thrive on a temperature at 60 degrees or 90 degrees. And they think that that is because life originated from the deep, from those areas. You know, initially the earth was hotter than at the moment. So the life began there, and now as earth cool, those are the places where they live at the moment. So that has changed our view of the earth, of the where life originate, and so people think that places like Europa, one of the satellite of the Jupiter, is a likely place where there may be life. And also in Korea, we have new research vessels, and I'm taking advantage of these to study the Indian Ocean. And Indian Ocean is quite far from Korea. It takes about 1 month to get there. But because of the research vessel, we are able to do work around the Indian Ocean. And also, Korea has two stations, one being built in Antarctic. And so, using this recent icebreaker research vessels, I'm also actively participating in this seagoing research. Well, I used to go there by myself, but now because of disability, I send other people, you know, so that I don't have to get seasick. And nowadays, everything is done by video, and then satellite communication, so I can sit in my room and then participate in science without getting seasick, you know. So, yeah, life has gotten better for me as a result of injury. I always tell people that, you know, there are so many amazing things you can do once you can log onto the computer. Once you can access computer, I can read books on the computer. I cannot flip pages, but I can have the book scanned. And once you have a scanned file, digital file, you can flip the pages on the book. So I can read books on the computer, email, watch television, Skype, talk. And so many, many things I can do with computer, but the problem is, how do I access the computer? But with Integra Mouse, I can do this. And so I often say that computer is God's gift to disabled people. You know? And as you know, Korea is also very advanced in high-tech, especially in smartphones and electronics. So I tell people that the smartphones and electronics, mobile computing and all this stuff, which is a big export item for Korea and which helps people, also can be very helpful tool for disabled community. So Korea is very big in information, communication, and technology, but then the same technology can help disability people, and that is what we do with our $10 million, you know. With that, half of the money is devoted on developing technology, like what LifeTool is doing. And the half is spent on developing, I mean, tools are also important, but the education and giving student training and then giving them jobs and are also important. So we spend a lot of money, half of the money on hardware and software, but also half of the money is spent on education and empowerment of students through information and computer technology, which I call it simply humanware, because as opposed to software and hardware. So as you can see in this picture, we have the IP television, but IP television, it's controlled by the set-top box and remote controller, so I cannot use those devices. So I asked Korean Telecommunication to make IPTV that I can use with this Integra mouse. So they made one. And also, I told people that I hate Apple, iPod, iPhone, iPad, because I cannot touch. And then Samsung Electronics made a Galaxy Tab for me that I can use with Integra mouse, because they are competing with Apple and they are very happy to make this one for me. So, okay. So, as I said, in addition to hardware and software, we also need to give vision and then hope to young people. And this is what I'm doing in Korea. Because even though I got the $10 million, I'm not a developer. I'm a scientist. So I don't really know much about technology, but I know how to educate people in science and technology. So this is the part that I'm doing in addition to my own science. So thank you very much for your attention.
Yeah, thank you very much, Professor Lee, for your introduction. So we now open the auditorium.
Yeah.
Please ask your questions. If nobody breaks the ice, I'm the first who has one. Professor Lee, can you remember the moment when you returned to the university after rehab? What was the reaction of the academic community on your quick return from hospital?
Okay.
It was before you got famous, so what was the authentic reaction there?
Everybody, thought that they heard about my story, but when they saw me, they could not believe how severe it was. They thought I could move my hand or do something, but they were surprised. I guess because everybody is so polite, they do not show it, you know. But I guess people who see me for the first time are surprised at the level of injury. And so, because in Korea, people with my level of injury stay at home and don't go around.
That's so the background of my question, because South Korea, disability often is hidden.
Yeah, because usually in Asian society, disability, when you have a disabled person, it is a responsibility of the family. Mm-hmm. And we used to have big family. Now, even in Korea, the family is all becoming smaller and smaller. So people with disability are cut in the middle, you know. Mm-hmm. From the traditional way was the family take care of it, but now the family itself has become disintegrated and become smaller. So people with disability cannot be taken in full care by the family alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so what about institutions? Because in Austria there are a lot of institutions taking care of disabled persons.
We have institutions and like that. But I think Korea is doing well. But what I found out is that countries commitment or care for how much the country invests in disability depends on the economy level.
Mm-hmm.
So as Korea is getting more affluent and the economy is doing well, I think this field is expanding in Korea. But before, it was a little bit difficult.
Okay, thank you. Bitte. Frau Meyer.
Thanks a lot for the presentation, and I like the way you are treating your accident and all these things around it. For me, it's a question, you didn't mention anything about your mental condition after the accident, how you really treated the accident personally, how you succeeded to get back to life, that it was worth living it. That seems to me, beside the great technology you were coming in touch with, but the great point for me.
Yes, that's a very good question. And actually, I had no depression or no psychological trouble at all. Because every time you change hospital, what they do is they physically examine you, and then the doctor, psychologist, psychiatric doctor comes in and profiles you. And for me, the doctor came in only once, and they said, this patient does not need. They signed me off. And I don't know why, but I didn't think this was unfortunate. I don't think this was a turn in my luck. I thought this was a change in direction. Not that my luck ran out, you know. I always considered myself lucky, and I thought this was just a change in direction. And one of my friend told me that this was his way to encourage me. He said he thought I was already a champion in my field. And he said, when you become a champion and you have no more competitors, you raise your weight level to go for, you know, from middleweight to heavyweight. So consider yourself as changing the weight level. And so I said, well, I don't consider myself that as a champion, but I think that was a very good way of putting it. And I felt very, yes. Because I can beat everybody in my field very easily. I made myself disabled so that I can enjoy the competition more.
Quite a positive way to think about it. So,
Professor, first of all, thank you very much for this personal report on what happened to you, the accident. It was very interesting and touching. And my question is now, you mentioned that if a factory of Linz, a company, developed this tool, I'm not quite sure which one it is. Is it the red
one
you have in front of your mouth?
Yeah.
Maybe if you don't mind, you could maybe explain something about it. And my second question, if I may add immediately. So the program you are running now in Korea means it is financed by government, as far as I understood.
Yes.
And probably they are expecting something in return for this 10 million they give you for 10 years.
Yeah.
So probably there are other people in your situation which you might bring back to work thanks to this tool, for example. And which part is now developed in Korea? Which part is developed in Linz? Or do you have other ongoing programs on this device?
Yes. Very good question. This one, I move it with my lip And then by sipping, there's a small hole, sipping and puffing, I can simulate left and right click of the computer. So now, to get out of this program, I have to puff. And I think I don't recognize Germany, but that's the last one, maybe. The
yeah.
Out. You know? Yeah, like that. I can do that. Now, I am not a developer, but I brought in a very big money to the disability community. And traditionally in Korea, and I'm sure in here, the Ministry of Welfare, Medicine, Health, Education, Labor are the ones who take care of disability. In Korea, we have Department of Commerce. They are the biggest ministry in terms of money. You know, this Department of Commerce in Korea funds Hyundai, Samsung, and all this Korean industry. So it is like in United States, comparable to Department of Defense. You know, in United States, Department of Defense provides all the high-tech, supports all the high-tech industry. So in Korea, Department of Commerce is very, very big. And I wrote this article, and it was the Department of Commerce who decided to fund me. So if I got the money from the Department of Health, Welfare, I would have many, many people lobbying against me, disabilities, traditional disability community, say, oh, this guy does not know anything about disability. He's a newcomer. Why do you give him this money, you know? But because I got the money from somewhere nobody thought I would get, you know, the Department of Commerce, for them, they were, it was like a peanut, you know? But the Department of Commerce, they want return back of the money. There is a royalty. So if the government invests in something to company, they want it to be successful commercially, and they want some royalty in the back. So that's the catch, you know? That's the disadvantage. The advantage is that they have a lot of money, so the grants they give are at least 10-20 times bigger than normally you would get from the health end. But so they want something in return back. And so I worry about that a lot, you know, because assistive technology, very difficult to make money on it, because everybody's disability is so different and diverse. So it is very difficult to make money on assistive technology, but I've gone through many things. I don't care about it. I worry that 10 years later, you know? Yeah.
So, just a moment, please wait for the microphone. Thank you. Coming up.
Yeah, but still, the question is, how does your center work? I mean, there were many items in respect to technology, hardware, software, education. Are you connected to other institutions for?
Yes. For the development, research and development, we have 8 programs, starting from Korean speech recognition to AAC devices, all these things. But these are the projects I give them to companies, because university professors never make anything practical or productive. I know that. No, they just use this to write paper, you know, use graduate students, but so we give them to companies. The university, on the other hand, focus on the education, especially education in science and engineering, because I found out that 80% of students in Korea in college with disability study humanity, social science, and arts. Only 20% enter into science and engineering. And so, of course, studying humanity and social science is okay, but we want to give them more choice. So one, our effort is to make them more literate in math, computer, and engineering science in this area. So most of the university effort is in education. The actual making is by the companies. You know, if you give that money to the professors, they make something that may be useful in 50 years. You know. So, yeah, I couldn't do that, you know.
Is talking about speech recognition, big software companies are promising good software for years and years and years, and all they got is Siri on the iPhone. Is there a development you see in the speech recognition by your research, by your funds you grant to the industry?
Well, I become an expert in speech recognition. Okay, I'm not a developer, but I use this so much that I think I can speak what the problem is with speech recognition. Mm-hmm. Problem of speech recognition is not the software or the recognition proficiency. It is the user. Normal people without disability, cannot use speech recognition because they have keyboard and mouse. They can use keyboard and mouse. They cannot tolerate one small mistake. You know? But for people with disability, that is the only way I can do so. I become a friend with computer. I say in a way that computer understands it. So I don't wait for computer to recognize it. I make myself very available to computer. So there are even some people say, well, speech recognition proficiency is 99%. No, you don't need that. I can even work with 50%. If I say something computer does not understand, I say it over, over, and so. So for ordinary people, speech recognition is just a toy. For us, it is a must. So I know over the years how to make computer, I mean, you have to be part of a computer. You know, sometimes, I can make it understand. Actually, when a camera comes with a reporter and I have to demonstrate in front of camera, it doesn't work because I get a little bit nervous and computer recognizes it. Yeah. So I think the speech recognition is not the technology, but the manner the people use it. So yeah, for people with disability, still, even though it is not 100%, they will use it and make it into 100%. But the people with without disability, that's just a fun game, a toy, you know.
It's so not you're using it every day?
I use it every day. I use it every day, and I can make it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be a very friendly user. You have to make it so you have to first I can make it work very well. It takes time, but you have to adjust to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you tried this input device that takes brain signal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You probably thought that was a joke or still not perfect, but still, people with disability can use that. Because for them, if that is not, there's no other way. There's no alternative. But for ordinary people, you have perfect alternative, keyboard and mouse. Why would you use speech recognition? You like to make it fail, you know? You say something the computer does not understand and say, hey, look at it. Siri, oh, it's bullshit, okay? Mm. You like to see it fail. But I would work with it so that it tries to recognize me. Or else I'm in trouble, you know?
Okay.
So it's the attitude, I think.
All right, thank you. Just a moment, please. Yeah. Yes, falls ich es kann, bitte.
Haben die vergangenen Atombombenversuche in Nevada oder auch speziell im Pazifik Auswirkungen auf die Tektonik und die jetzigen Erdbeben und Vulkanausbrüche?
Mhm. Okay, try to translate that. Did the atomic tests in the oceans, the Pacific, Bikini Island, and all this, do they interfere with earthquake?
Well, earthquake is much, much bigger than atomic. If there is a small earthquake, even a small one, that's like, many people compare it like it's 1,000 times or 10,000 times greater than atomic bomb in Hiroshima. So so the size of a earthquake, the energy of earthquake is much, much greater than the atomic. So
but is there a way to initiate an earthquake by an atomic bomb?
Well, earthquake is so unpredictable. I mean, this is our secret in our business, you know, earth science. We cannot predict earthquake. We tried very hard. A lot of money has been spent on predicting earthquake, but up to this point, we have miserably failed. So, for instance, you know this big earthquake and tsunami in Japan, which happened? And after this tsunami and earthquake, some Korean reporters asked me, you know, Professor, is there a way to prevent these big natural disasters? I said, no. But I think there is one way because, you know, in Japan, everybody thought that this big earthquake will happen south of Tokyo, on the east of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And they put millions of dollars studying this area and saying that that's where the next earthquake will happen. But in reality, earthquake happened north of Tokyo, west of, I mean, to the east of Tokyo. So they completely misjudged. And also in the United States, there is a place called Parkville, where people think that earthquake will happen every 100 years or so. We have put a lot of instruments there waiting for earthquake to occur, but nothing happens. So I said, well, one way to prevent earthquake is to study that area by scientists. Then no earthquake will happen. Whenever we say earthquake will happen here, and we do a lot of investment and get money to study, we are usually wrong. So,
so we need a lot of geologists in Turkey.
Yeah. Maybe we always study the wrong thing.
There's another question. Please. Just. Oh. Over there.
My question is concerning geophysics. When you have a planar liquid which you heat from below and cool from above, you have spontaneous order under some certain circumstances, which we call the Rayleigh-Benard cells.
Yes.
Does there a similar system exist in the geophysical convection system, or is it completely irregular?
Well, the natural convection system looks kind of very square, like the width of the convection cell and height of the convection cell is more or less same, but yes, more square like that. But in Earth, the height of the convection is about, people think it's about 700 kilometers, but the width of the convection can be like 10, 20 times, almost even more than 10 times longer than the height. So that's because the plate somehow rolls very long distance. So yes, we think that is the way that Earth moves is due to convection, but we don't really understand how. I mean, because if you simulate convection, everything is more or less how you can have a convection cell with long distance and short height in Earth. That's something we do not understand, I think.
But is there a certain pattern when you look on the surface of these convection cells?
We think that the natural convection would have a similar height and similar width, but when we observe, we cannot observe the direct convection, but we observe the sliding of the plate on the surface, and that says that says the convection is has a much wider width. So we cannot directly observe the convection. We observe the consequence of convection. So the consequence of convection is very different from the natural convection and experiment. So there is gap in our knowledge of how that works.
What is the typical speed of this convection?
We think that the convection of Earth is the speed of your growth of your nail. So like 5 or 6 centimeters per year. Yeah. But if you multiply that by 100 million years, you get 5,000 kilometers. But the typical, in the Pacific, the plate comes up and then travels on the surface about 10,000 kilometers before it goes back into the earth. So it looks like the aspect ratio between the height and the length of convection is like more than 15 to 1. So that's something we do not fully understand yet. Because natural convection or the computational you do, you have convections which are more or less same height, same width, go down like that. You don't have a long convection cell like that.
Okay, thank you.
But this reminds me on the convection in the atmosphere. You have these systems of high pressure and low pressure.
Yes.
Which is quite interesting for the meteorologist. You have 10 kilometers of troposphere, and these typical cells are at about 1,000 kilometers in length. And so they are very similar as you...
Yes.
So these convection cells in the interior of the
Earth.
Yeah. Is there any parallel structure? Does this depend on the rotation of the Earth?
In the atmosphere, you can measure and test with balloons and then with airplanes, but down Earth you cannot measure it, and we only have indirect way shooting seismic wave into it, but so people say compare, but it is not a hard evidence yet, because we cannot observe. We have no direct observation, so we make many models and imagine this is what would be like, but there can be alternative models, and determining which one is correct would has to do with observation, but at the moment, there are very few observations. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Nächste Frage, bitte.
Can I ask you a private question?
Yes.
You first told us that in Korea, the handicapped people are rather hidden and stay in the families and not on the road and so on. What was the opinion of your family when you told them, I plan to go to work and go outside and live my life as alone as possible?
Okay. It was very difficult for them to understand that. Because, you know, first of all, they become too protective, and they treat you. I mean, it is normal for them to be very cautious and things like that. So I had to make a decision, you know, whether to live a safe, comfortable life with family or do something crazy. And because I was a scientist, I think I could distinguish from the what works and what does not work, because I was a scientist, and so I had a lot of misunderstanding and miscommunication with family, because I was very, even when I wanted to go back to work, my family said, why, you know, why, because if you go to work, you might get cold or something, so then they wanted to, so in a way, it took me many years. Now they give it up. So I can do it my terms, but it was at first very difficult because they're trying to do everything for me. Yeah, too protective. And I think that's actually the right way, because if I had been a little bit more handicapped, I think this thing that I do is crazy, you know. I should take care of my health and stay with, but I felt that I was very lucky, you know, even though I always say that this is like a garage sale. When you do a garage sale in the United States, garage sale, you sell
no
the stuff that you do not use every day. Your golf set or your old ski, but you don't sell the stuff that you use every day, your necessities. So I think that I lost many, many capabilities, but I look at that and say, yeah, but then you don't use that every day, do you? You know? You just need heart, brain, and the vital necessity I did not sell. So I had to make I knew from my judgment, my scientific judgment, that even though I'm really severely injured, I knew I can do it, but family would not allow you to do that. You know, they would be very, very protective, and so I had to basically divorce my family. My mother and father, I told my mother and father that, you know, Sang-muk, you knew, consider him dead. And he died in the California desert. This is another me, you know. I had to tell them that. And I wasn't sure whether that would work, but looking back, I think it worked. It worked for me. I don't know how, but it worked. So I'm very lucky in that sense. I took a risk and it worked, yeah.
Thank you very much. And another question, what about the kids in Korea, the handicapped kids? Are they living at home, or is there any opportunity to go to school, a special education school with such
institute?
In Korea is a country that has developed very rapidly. People say it took 150 years for England to become from agricultural society to a modern industrial society. It took 150 years. Japan, it took 70 years. Korea, it took less than 30 years. So, you know, because of this fast change, the environment can change rapidly, but for people's mentality and belief, their thinking to change, it takes a lot of time. So many people in Korea are embedded in the old tradition. Their thoughts and their values are embedded in old tradition. You know, my father uses smartphone and like travels around the world, but I see him as a farmer, you know. Farmer who has cell phone, because the problem in Korea is we became successful too quickly. If we mistreat people with disability, it's because we became successful too quickly. And we make many of our mistakes stem from the fact that Korea became successful too quickly. And I look at China and that they're going even much faster than Korea, so I see that the same problem we faced will repeat in China, you know. I can become a big teacher in China. You know? But I think, you know, it takes, in Europe, it took many years to have this, citizenship, an understanding of their society and living together. And so in Korea, that is happening, changing every day. So, I think, if I say that kids are not being treated well, I say this, and if I go back to Korea, it's different. The kids are being treated well. So Korea is such a quickly changing country. I think, I cannot say what the average is, you know. I cannot, when I say something right here and I go back to Korea, it's probably changed already.
Another question? Professor Lee, despite the fact that you have great help and assistance with all your technical tools, you need 24-hour assistance. How do you manage this and how do you finance it?
Oh, first of all, I have a very rich father. My father is rich. And then second, I work. And I earn more money than before, you know, because I run this also, not just my science, but other government projects, so I earn, and then, for me, I don't have any financial trouble, and I always say that, you know, I must use all this money before I die, you know. For me, you know, the challenge is how long I will live, you know, I must spend it all before I die, so for me, I'm very fortunate that I don't have this economic trouble, and well, it is in large part because of the fact that I work, and I'm lucky that I do many work and I get very well paid, yeah. So I don't rely on the social system. I pay tax, you know. So,
Just a moment, please. It's because of the recording.
We have spent now, I think, 36 hours, three days almost in Austria together. We've seen several places, we've visited several institutes and so on. What is your first or your impression about Austria or up Austria? Did you, you know, is it like you've expected it, or did you find out some things that were surprising to you, or... I didn't ask you this question so far, I just realized I would like to ask you.
Well, I see some difference with Korea, and I think this can be a lesson for us. because Korea has been very successful economically because of few companies, few very big, large companies that have been successful. So, but in Austria, you have many small and successful small, mid-sized industries. And in Korea, we are getting worried because like big corporation of Samsung, or they will not produce Integra mouse unless they make 100,000 of them, mass production, you know. So in order for Korea to be successful in the assistive technology, I think we must have strong small companies, and this is something what the government is also trying to promote. So government is trying to say that Korea has been successful up to this point because of big companies, like big major companies, but this cannot go on forever, you know. We've been lucky, so we have to change our industry so that it will be more
research, innovation,
and then by small companies to change the ecosystem.
Okay.
And I think the assistive technology is one way. It depends on small companies, middle and small companies. And so I think Austria would be a good example. And I can go back to Korea and say, oh, in Austria, you know, there are so many good small companies producing assistive technology, and this is the way to go, so I can bluff. I can bluff, you know. I've been to Austria. I've seen it all, you know.
Tell me a small bluff.
Yeah, I've seen it all, and I can say that. I can pretend as I know. I know what I know. Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions? If not, then I want to say very, very many thanks to Professor Lee for being here, for coming to us to Linz, to the Kepler Salon. Many thanks to you all for this wonderful discussion. I liked very much. What I have to do now is to tell something about the events in future, and I'm changing to German. Am Mittwoch, 16. November, meine Damen und Herren, um 19 Uhr ist Herr Professor Sarajevci zu Gast von der Uni Linz. Er spricht über Solarenergie, das Öl der Zukunft. Sarajevci, ein sehr interessanter Mann. Am Montag, 21. November um 19.30 Uhr geht es wie immer am Montag zur regulären Zeit um Fantasie und Wirklichkeit im Zusammenhang mit Angriffen aus dem Computernetz. Zu Gast ist Gerhard Eschelbeck, Experte für Computer- und Netzwerksicherheit, ein Autor auch, er ist unter anderem tätig im Silicon Valley. Bitte treten Sie, wenn Sie Interesse haben, hier näher an den Kepler Salon heranzurücken, dem Freundeskreis bei. Auch dafür gibt es hinten bzw. hier entsprechende Unterlagen. Ich darf mich sehr herzlich von Ihnen verabschieden und mich nochmal sehr herzlich bedanken. Bedanken möchte ich mich auch nochmal bei der Firma LiveTool und dem wunderbaren Würstelbuffet, dem wir uns nun bis längstens 22 Uhr zuwenden. Danke sehr und noch schönen Abend. So, now we go for